This interview is with Aubrey Thomas, a farmer from Cragness Township in Clay County, Minnesota, who began farming in 1946. This interview was held at the Morehead State University's recording studio on January 8, 1985. The interviewer is Don Atherton, representing the Heritage Education Commission. And Mr. Thomas, we got you in here today, and we was looking for some background on you being a farmer out here in Cragness Township, and you grew up in Cragness Township. You were born and raised with your family there. What was it like back in the 30s when you were just a young person and growing up on the farm?
Well, I think it was mostly hard work. I was born in 21 and started grade school in 1928. We worked in the fall after a couple years in school. Probably in my third grade, I was staying out of school to help on the farm. And also in the spring, we had quite a few cattle and horses to take care of, and one old tractor. We raised mostly grain, and I never got to haul bundles. I always, as soon as I was old enough to do anything, I was the grain hauler and shoveling wheat in the granary window that is higher than your head was quite a job for me. I wasn't very tall to begin with, and it sure is nice that we've got elevators now to do that kind of work. I finished 12 years of school, and that was all the formal education I had.
When you were growing up out here, Mr. Thomas, you had several brothers and a sister, I believe. Were you the oldest in this family?
Yes, I was the oldest, and it seems like there was four boys and the youngest was a girl. And I suppose that's why there weren't any more of us. They had a girl to help my mother out. We were all born at home, incidentally, and after a couple younger brothers, I finally figured out that we were going to have another addition when we got a hired girl to help my mother.
Well, now, being the oldest in the family, how did this come about? You were about the right age when World War II came along.
Yeah, I was drafted in 1942, and I spent 3 years and 6 days in World War II, taking training at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and going to Africa, Italy, France, Germany, and England.
Well, now after this little stint you had with the services in World War II, why then you came back in 1945 or late 1945, I assume. Is this when you started to farm then?
Yes, my dad retired immediately when I came home, which was in October of 45. And we signed to buy his machinery and stuff, and we got it paid for the next fall. But it wasn't too much machinery. One H International tractor, which was bought in 1940, and a 12-foot combine, 12-foot swather, 10-foot Kovar spring tooth, and some old horse-pulled machinery. It cost $1,500.
And this was for a full line of machinery to farm this half section of land that you have out here in Cragness Township.
Yes, and it wasn't too hard to farm it either. The spring tooth was our cultivator, and it wasn't a very effective machine, but it was as good as you could get in those days.
Well, now, as you got started farming with this old machinery, what kind of crops were you raising back in 1946?
In 46, I suppose we usually raised barley and corn and some wheat and alfalfa that we hayed for the horses and cattle.
Well, now this was back in 1946, and now we're in 1985. How has farming changed during your life out here in Cragness Township?
It has changed beyond my wildest dreams at the time to think that I wouldn't have to sit on a cold tractor at this age with tractors now with air conditioning and heaters and radios in them. It has really changed. We've got a lot more power. Of course, we farm probably four times as much land, but it's a lot easier to farm now.
Well, now you're talking about the machinery that you have today, and then we'll go back to when you started in 1946. You bought all your father's equipment for $1,500. Now, if your son is going to farm with you today, what would you have to sell your equipment to him?
Oh, I would say probably almost 100 times that much. But if I was to take the value of the land, but he couldn't do it, he's going to have a lot of help and to get started.
Well, without you, then there's just no way that your son could do this and to start up the way that you did from your dad.
No, I didn't think it at the time that it was such a good deal. I wanted to go to college, but he said everybody would go to college on that GI Bill that we had then. So he says that there'll be professors out digging ditches, so he kind of talked me out of it. Then he had a heart attack, and I stayed on. I'm sure glad it turned out that way.
Well, back in the 30s, as you were growing up, and then you look at it today, you sit in a modern home with electricity and water and telephones and all these conveniences. Back in those early years, did you have all these good things out on your farm here?
No, I like to read, and I've read hundreds of books, I suppose, just by a kerosene lamp or a gas Coleman stove. And we've always had water in the house, which was by a little pump that pumped it from the cistern that we had out in the yard. It was about 75 feet away from the house. So we always had water, and we always had a sewer line going out to the river that we had right by we lived right on the river.
When did you first get your first telephone? Do you remember that out on this farm out here?
Oh, that was real late. We didn't get a telephone till probably 1954 or so. We got electricity in 1940, and we were on the main line, so we were among the first to get it, and they branched out. Some people, my next door neighbors, probably didn't get it till 1945 or later.
Who were your close neighbors back in those days as you were growing up?
Well, there were the Tuftons and Tangens. That's Oliver Tufton's children, and Rudy Tangens, and there's other Tangens too that were very close. We were all close in that our grandmothers were still living, and we'd all go to their place on their birthday. It was a pretty big thing to have those birthday parties. That seemed to be enough entertainment, or most of our entertainment in those days.
Well, did you have dances and plays and parties and this sort of thing out there with your close neighbors? That was your entertainment out there without television. Is this part of the way things were celebrated?
Yes, there were dances. I can remember when I was little, and because I'd never been to a dance before, and the folks took us along because we were so small. I didn't know what was going on, and to see all them people surging up and down at the same time was kind of intriguing.
Well, where were these dances held?
They were held in their neighbor's house. They seemed like big houses at the time, but now when you look at them, they're small. There was always someone around that could play a violin or fiddle or banjo, and the piano. If they had a piano, well, they had good music then. And us kids would watch till we got tired, and then they'd take us out and pile us on top of the overcoats that were laying on the bed that they'd left to take. And those dances lasted till morning, too, usually.
Well, your celebration of your holidays, and was this primarily with family, or the Christmas and Thanksgiving and Easter and so forth, or in those days, was there some special events going on in the neighborhood for them, too?
Oh, not too much. We, in the 40s and late 30s, and we'd probably get promised a trip to the lake on the 4th of July, or at, we'd have to be in the hayfield, it seemed like, in the morning. So that always seemed to come first. My dad was a hard worker, and we all worked hard, too, to get the privilege of going to the lake.
Now, Mr. Thomas, being brought up out here and lived here all of your life now, and we'd like to have you cover a little bit of your education background and where you went to school.
Well, my first grade, I went to the school over by the North Buffalo Church. It was right across the ditch from there. And having no older brothers or sisters, that was terrifying when my mother took me to the school and then drove away. I ran along the fence. There's a fence around the school, and I ran along it screaming. And that first day was tough.
Do you remember the name of this country school out here in Cragness?
Well, I think it was probably 24 South, because from then on, for the second grade through eighth, I went to District 24 North. So I think both those schools were in the same district.
About how far were these schools from your home? And how did you get to them?
My first grade school was about 2.5 miles by road from home. And then walk 1.5 when I could walk across the fields. And then the second school was directly across the river, and that was, I could walk across the river on ice in the winter, or which was about less than 0.5 mile to it, or if I walked around by the bridge, why, it was about 2 miles, I imagine.
What grades did they have? Now, you mentioned two different schools that you went to out in the country. Were there different grades in these schools?
Yes, there was 8 grades in the one room. The first school I went to, I think there were about 20 children. And then the second year, there was, I think, 32 or 35 children in all 8 grades. I can remember the first day of school in the second year. There were so many big girls there, and the teacher wasn't very big, and I did not know who was going to be the teacher there for a while before they got us sitting down.
You had one teacher for all these grades, and she acted as the janitor and everything. She did in the house cleaning and the total. She did everything there and taught 8 grades in addition to this?
Yes, she did. She did it, and my dad was treasurer, and during the later part of the 30s, I saw her. Their checks came back to my dad, and that was for $68 a month, and she paid board and room from a next-door neighbor out of that $68.
And you went your first 8 years of training then was in a one-room schoolhouse.
Yes.
And then where did you proceed on after you graduated from the 8th grade?
Well, we must have had an awful good teacher. I had the same teacher for 6th, 7th, and 8th grades. And I started more at high school in the 9th grade. We didn't have any buses, so we had to drive ourselves to school every day, which was all right. And then we stayed in town and board and roomed ourselves.
This school was in the Moorhead High School that you were attending?
Yes, it was Moorhead Senior High School then.
And you stayed in there and went to school through grade 12?
Yes, I went. My dad took a trip in 36 and 37, we all went to California, and part of my ninth grade I spent in California. And I could make it. I actually graduated that year by going to two very separate schools. It was a lot of fun. Not many people took trips at the time, but it was quite an interesting experience.
Well, even in those days, you came into the Moorhead High School, then did you have any extracurricular activities that you could be involved in living way out there or 10 miles from town?
No, I couldn't, except in the winter when I was staying in town. And the only thing I was in was intramural sports that we had, like basketball.
Well, now you went to high school in town then, but where was your church affiliations in those days?
Well, that was at the North Buffalo Lutheran Church, which was chartered back in the 1800s. I don't know how old it was at the time, or how old it is now. And I guess it's mostly Norwegians there. I can remember services when I was a little kid. I couldn't understand Norwegian, but the minister had sermons in Norwegian, and if you think ministers are boring now, you ought to try to sit to a language that you couldn't understand.
How do you feel? Has this, belonging to this rural congregation, has this had an effect on you and your family today?
Oh, yes. It's a comfort to go there, and we've been regular churchgoers and board members.
Well, now, Mr. Thomas, we come down into the economics of farming today. We have some federal programs, the old agricultural stabilization and conservation programs and the Soil Conservation Service. Have they been any help to you in your farming career?
Yes, I think so. I think they probably supported the price of the crops I've raised. And the soil conservation has helped us a lot in land soil preservation and ditching and rotation.
Well, as we know, this ASC, handles the farm programs that are made up in Washington. Do you belong to this? These farm organizations, or not farm organizations, but this program of the ASC of conserving acres and all these sort of things, what is your feeling towards these?
I've always belonged to them. It just seemed like the thing to do. I don't believe that farmers can survive without belonging to them.
Now we have some farm organizations, the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union and the NFO, and then there's cooperative elevators and this sort of thing around the community. How are you involved with these different farm organizations, and what have they done for you?
Well, about the only co-op I belong to are the beet plant and the Cragness elevator. And I've always bought my fuel at Farmers Union and that, and I just never felt inclined to belong to them. So.
Well, the philosophy of Farm Bureau and Farmers Union are pretty much opposite, and you just sort of stay in the middle of the road. Is that what you're telling us here today? And you don't belong to either one of them as such, so you're active with them.
Yeah, I'm not active. I don't belong to them. I don't think they can, when they're both an opposite, want to go in different directions, I don't think they're going to be that effective, either one of them.
Now, you have stated here earlier your social activities, and that comes back to the 4-H program. They've been quite active in Clay County. Were you a participant in the 4-H program as such?
Yes, I belonged to 4-H for a number of years, but it expanded our line of friends and it was quite a social thing for have one Friday a month to get together and listen to the Clay County Extension agent. And
have you had any strong relationships with the county agent, and do you use those offices to help if you have problems with your farming today?
Yes, I think our county agent has been doing a good job. He has, seems like he has several meetings a year on farm safety with chemicals, and he's head of the crop improvement our board we have in town here, or the club we have in town.
How do you feel about your relationship with the lending agencies? As a farmer, you have to borrow money at times. Do you have, we have the banks and the FHA and the Federal Land Bank and the PCA. Are these all these organizations necessary, and how do they affect your operation?
Well, the Federal Land Bank has been very helpful for me. I couldn't have started farming. Couldn't have bought any land or owned any land without borrowing from the Federal Land Bank. I've never gotten anything from FHA. I make just enough money to not qualify for FHA loans. That's been hurting, I think, some of us smaller farmers by backing some of the bigger farmers that have expanded so much that they can't pay their bills, and they've probably taken land that we could have bought or had, and then they get in trouble over where I couldn't see that I could come out. Well, the FHA come and saved them.
Well, since 1946, Mr. Thomas, we've seen many things happen in the farming sector. The advent of fertilizers, insecticides, and chemicals, and your farm machinery, we've seen a lot of changes in all these. What is your feelings about these, and how do you go along with the changes that we've had today?
Well, those changes have all been to the good. The first new machinery my brother and I bought was a grain drill with a fertilizer attachment on, and a potato planter with a fertilizer attachment on. We could see that fertilizer was going to be the way to go, where our crops have increased in bushels. Like when I was a kid, if you got 20 bushels to the acre, you had a pretty good crop, and now you don't have anything to brag about if it's 50 bushels. So I'm sure that fertilizer and crop improvement and the college, NDSU College, and all agricultural colleges have helped our strains and our grain. And
have you been helped with the insecticides and the chemicals that we hear so much about today?
Yes, it's quite comforting to know that we can get chemicals now in a hurry if some insect comes and invades our fields, like the army worm or cutworms and things that we couldn't control at all.
Well, what about the chemicals that the farmers are using so enthusiastically today to control the different weeds? Are you a strong advocate of these, and could we farm without them?
Well, it would be nice not to have to depend on them, but until they come with something else, we couldn't farm without them, I don't think, anymore, because we need so good a crop to make our production costs.
Well, Mr. Thomas, you live out in an area out here in Cragness Township, and your farm is located right on the Buffalo River. Has this had any effect on you from the river going out of its banks? How does this affect you out there?
Well, that affects me pretty much. We've been flooded 5 times since 1962, and I mean the yard and the basement has been filled with water, which comes probably from these drainage that soil conservation has set up and paid for, and hurts us. It's necessary, but we've got a watershed board now to try to get some holding dams that will hold water for a while and then let it out gradually so it doesn't flood the rivers all the time.
No, we've brought out earlier in this interview that about the minister in your church at one time just speaking Norwegian. What sort of a background have you came from, Mr. Thomas, and have you used different languages than the English language in your home?
No, we were never taught Norwegian, although my grandmother never spoke Norwegian to us children, but she never spoke anything but Norwegian to her children, like my dad and his brothers. They'd only talk to her in Norwegian, and she could speak good English. It was funny. They wouldn't teach us it, and when our folks didn't want us to know what they were talking about, they'd speak Norwegian to each other.
Well, coming from a Norwegian background like this, did you have some special foods in your home that on holidays and so forth that was brought out?
Oh, yes. The Norwegians had some very tasty, mighty high-calorie dishes like, they had potato dumplings, which we called komp, and rumagrot, which had a lot of cream and rich cream and butter and flour in, and lutefisk, which was an import from Norway, I suppose, and smelled a lot worse than it tasted. I still think it's one of the best fish there is.
Well, now, being a farmer out here now, have you held been obligated to hold different offices in the township or the school and so forth out there?
Yes, I've had just about every position in the North Buffalo Church. I've been on the Cragness Township Board and the American Crystal Moorhead Factory Director. I don't know if there's... and a director of the Federal Land Bank, headquarters in Detroit Lakes, but we had a one day a week office in Moorhead here.
Well, we have a couple strong political parties around here. Have you been any party affiliation with the political parties?
I suppose I could say I'm a unregistered Democrat, usually voting on along party lines for the local candidates, and usually, but not always, Democratic on the national offices.
Well, as we've watched these parties go different directions through the years, what is your attitude towards politics?
Well, it isn't perfect, but I imagine it's the best we can do now. It seems like it takes a millionaire now to run for any office that's around, though.
Well, Mr. Thomas, it was good hearing what it was like farming back when you started up and how it's progressed into the year of 1985. Thank you for coming here.
Thank you, Don.